Hello and welcome back to the podcast. And today I'm going to be talking to you about how do you go about improving your website and how do you actually know where to even begin. So many people all the time, my clients will say to me, I feel so overwhelmed because I don't even know where to start. We know that what we're trying to achieve, like more revenue or customer loyalty, retention, something like that, they'll know what their goal is or they'll know what the big problem is, but how do I know what to change to make a difference? And I can completely understand it can be very complex and it can be very overwhelming. But for somebody like myself, who is a UX and product designer, that is our job. So our job on a daily basis, I say I'm a bit like Sherlock Holmes, is to be a detective and to understand what it is that could be causing the problem. So we might have a problem, or we might have a positive goal, should we say, that we want to work towards. So say, for example, we know that our users just aren't satisfied. And we know this because we're getting a large number of complaints. But what do we fix? How do we know where to start with all this information? Well, the first thing is you'll only really be aware of problems on your website or your piece of software or your app if you've got a feedback loop. So a feedback loop is essentially a loop of communication between you and your client. So you might have feedback forms, you might have a survey that pops up on your site, you might do interviews, you've got a way of collecting data. Now, you might just have quantitative data, so you might have things like Google Analytics installed that are going to give you quantitative measurements on how your website's doing. You might have Hotjar installed, which is like a heat map, which is telling you where users are clicking. And there's lots of other different types of software which are very similar. That's quantitative data. And quantitative data is going to give you those statistics. So you might be able to look and see where users are gathering. However, what that data doesn't give you is how your users are feeling or what their thoughts are during that process. So I always say to people, whenever they're creating their feedback loops, it's great to have heat maps installed, great to have Google Analytics installed, but I would also marry that up with some qualitative data as well. Because then when you come to do your analysis and you're looking to make a decision, you can look holistically across the board, not just what statistics are saying, because there can be a lot of gaps within that, a lot of questions that are unanswered. And that's where we use qualitative data techniques to get those answers. And qualitative data techniques are things like one-to-one interviews. It's stuff where necessarily we can't quantify the amount, but we can test with 5 to 6 users and ask some questions and understand on a deeper level what the user needs are and what user needs are unmet. And also we can start to dig into their minds, which is something that we just can't do when we're looking at statistics or we're looking at graphs or bar charts. So one way you can actually start to see what's going on is to go through those channels that you already have installed. Now, if you don't have anything like that installed already, that is obviously the first thing that you should do, whether or not you're aware of your problems or not. And you need to decipher that data as well. This is one of my key principles, is you can't just have a feedback loop if you're not actually actively looking to see what is going on with that data on a fortnightly basis, a monthly basis. You should set your own sort of rhythm to go through that data and analyze it. Other different types of qualitative data might be customer emails. How many times do you get emails from customers about maybe like an order or questions that they're asking? All of that should probably go into some sort of spreadsheet. And what you can do with qualitative data is you can start to affinity map it. And so every few months, you can then start to theme where this data is going? What is it telling us? And can we create some themes from this, which is going to give us an inkling of what the main problems are? So, for example, when we do this, we might find there are 4 to 5 different themes occurring. So people might have a particular issue with logging in, and that's really frustrating. So we've got, like, say, 4 or 5 different issues. Now, sometimes we find there can be many different issues, but what we don't want to do is go, one person or two people are saying this, okay, let's go and change it. I've seen that happen so many times. A lot of companies, they'll listen to one customer, go, yeah, you know, that's a great idea, and they'll go and implement that change, and that's the wrong way to do it. Because actually, the way I think and the way somebody else thinks, those, you know, just a handful of people, might be very different from our whole user base. So we need to actually ensure that the data we're using to drive design decisions is based upon some solid foundation, some solid evidence of multiple people saying the same thing. So once we've actually got that data and we've got our themes, and if there's more than 4 or 5 themes and we find we've got 10 or 20 themes, don't worry. There is something called the Kano model, which is a great model for understanding and identifying, okay, what are those things we can almost prioritize here and say, okay, what are the things within what people are saying that are must-haves within the platform? So the login is something that is going to obstruct somebody, create a barrier for them. We must get that fixed straight away, because that is part of the journey, the starting point for them actually getting onto the platform or the website, or, you know, to see their recent orders or anything like that. So think about that customer journey. That's a really great way to prioritize it. And let's start within, like, are there any blockers, or is there any friction points? Those things that we want to do to our site, which are happen so many times, look, I've got an amazing idea, you know, a client will say to me, and we'll listen to it out. And within the Kano model, a really out there idea, one that's going to really enhance our product or service, is something that is going to excite your users. So in the Kano model, we always have, like, basically a box, which is called exciters or delighters or something like that. So they're things which aren't expected from your audience. So when you've got all these problems, you might start to identify some solutions to these problems. But say you've got 10 to 20 solutions, how do I go about understanding which one of those solutions I should implement first? So you can put them into these boxes. So you've got the basic needs of your site, so like a login, or your site has to do X, Y, Z just to function. They're your basic needs. They have to be done. They have to be met. However, you've then got your customer satisfaction features. So these are the ones that are going to make them feel like they're having a great user experience. So these might be things like additional things that are going to make them feel really satisfied with your product. So it might be like some help functionality, a pop-up chat or something like that. Then you've got the things that are going to really excite them. These are things that are not expected. So I'll just explain this a little bit. So I went to a restaurant the other night in Manchester, and the restaurant was called Sexy Fish. And caveat here, so I thought the place was amazing. The food was really great. Did think the price was a little bit extortionate. However, one thing they are doing to sort of excite customers, I guess, is with your meal, you actually have some chopsticks, and those chopsticks are placed on a little gold fish. And on the bottom of that fish, it says, stolen from Sexy Fish. Now, I interpreted that as they want you to take that home. They probably factored that into the cost. Now, if you were looking at something to do to delight or excite customers or create a talking point, that's not a basic need to have one of them. It's not even a satisfactory need. it's a delighter. It's something that goes above and beyond. I say above and beyond, you know, this is all based upon everybody's got different opinions. So some people might go, oh my God, that well exceeded my expectations. Other people might say, that was a bit naff. Another example would be, say, for example, I go stay in a hotel and I have checked into my room and on the bed was a box of chocolate saying, welcome to your stay. And I didn't expect that. That wasn't just satisfactory. That was exceeding expectations. So we put them into little boxes. So I always say your website should have a mix of those basic and, well, not a mix. It's got to have all the basic functionality. But your satisfactory needs also need to be in there as well. Having quite a few of those will give you good customer experience. Now, take it to the next level and you just want to dip in a couple of those things that are going to excite your customers. Get them feeling like you can leave a lasting impression on them, walking away from your product going, I need to tell somebody about this. And you've probably done that before when you've been to see a show or you've experienced something and you've gone, you know what? That really impressed me. That was something different. So that's another way of looking at how we can prioritize them. But you could also do an effort matrix. This is a really simple way. And once you've got those themes of going, right, what is it that we work on? And your effort matrix is effort versus, you know, so say something's going to be really high impact, high effort. That's going to be something that you might want to do over the long term because it's going to have a high impact. But it's also going to take a lot of effort. So the things that you want to look at prioritising first are what is low effort but going to have a high impact. And you can plot this on a diagram. So say you've got 10 to 20 themes of problems on your site. You plot them using this effort matrix. And I call these the quick wins. These are the things that are going to help you go from A to B the fastest. And I create a backlog of these things. And when I'm creating a backlog, I prioritize them in that order. So the thing that's going to take the longest is going to have a high impact, though. It's something I'm going to do over maybe the next couple of months. However, and I'm a little bit out of breath here because I'm walking the dogs, but this is going to be something that can really help you decide, is there something out there that is high effort and low impact? Well, I mean, are we going to even bother doing those things at all? So it's another great way to understand what is it that we can be doing on our site to bring value to our customers and give us a bit of a clarity and a bit of a roadmap as well of where we want to go. So there's some techniques that I do with customers. And it can be a really great way to understand what is going on, gain some clarity, get some direction. Always, 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 when you're ever wanting to do anything to your site, you need to audit it first. So whether that be with, actually, we understand there's a bit of a problem here with, say, for example, the login screen. There's a lot of friction or the user onboarding or something like that. But we've got a few gaps. We've got a few questions because we don't fully understand. Having an understanding is going to be the key to creating the best user experience and bringing you the return upon investment that you're looking for. It's not enough to know that there's a problem, but not know how to fix it. The how to fix it should always creatively come from the research that you do. And that research is going back to that feedback loop of having maybe doing that qualitative data analysis where we might do some interviews. 5 to 6 participants is going to be enough to get, you know, to gather 87% of those user issues. So what you would do is if you have an understanding of an area that needs a little bit of attention, but you aren't fully sure exactly what the actual sticking points are, the friction points, what yous are thinking, which bits do I actually need to change, then what you should do is you should do this usability testing with those 5 to 6 participants to gain more insight. Now, it's really important as well to understand that we never ever ask our users what they want, because people just don't know. That is something that I've learned over 14 years of doing UX and product design. Users have no idea, or they think they know, but the results are very different. So don't fall into this danger trap, because it's going to waste a lot of time, and I want to help you save some time here. A lot of times I've had it in surveys with people, or in interviews where I've heard people ask their customers, is it this you want? And sometimes people are worried about upsetting other people. So they'll go, yeah, that sounds good. Because if I put words into somebody's mouth and I say to them, I'm thinking about doing this, what do you think? If I said this to one of my friends, they'll probably say, yeah, that's a good idea. Majority of them will, you know, we've all got some really truthful friends. We don't want people who are going to say things to please us. So the best way to do this is to analyze their behavior, to sit back and watch them use our product, giving them tasks to do without asking them directly anything, without showing them what to do, without explaining why we've put that button there. You know, it's quite funny, because I've seen it happen so many times where I've been sat with people who've been hired as UX researchers on projects, and they're justifying to the user why they've done what they've done. Well, unfortunately, that user is not going to have you by their side when they're sat at home, or when they're on their mobile on a train. So they've got to be able to do things independently, and it's got to make sense to them. And the only way to do that is to ensure that whatever you create is so simple, anybody can pick it up and start using it and understand it. So if you want to get ahead of the game and you really want to make a difference, you need to create your feedback loops and look at deciphering your data on a regular basis using the matrix impact versus effort, and also the Kanon model, to make some decisions on what you should do next. Speak to you soon.